Genesis chapter 30, please. Genesis chapter number 30. Part of me is very happy that it's June because I love the summer for many reasons. Part of me is very sad that it is June because summer is quickly slipping away and I love the summer for many reasons. Let's go ahead and stand, please. We're going to begin in verse number 22 of Genesis chapter 30. And we are going to read down for now to verse number 34. Genesis 30, beginning in verse number 22, and God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away, that I may go into mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little that thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own house also? And he said, what shall I give thee? Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats, and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. And again, we will stop there for now, and let's pray. Father, teach us, please, your word. And in teaching us your word, we desire to know about you, your power, your providence, the certainty of your commitments and the mystery of your ways. Pray that our faith would be strengthened. Pray that our obedience would be stirred. We look to you for help and ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. And you may, of course, be seated. Well, we are on Sunday mornings working our way through this portion of Genesis, looking at the life of Jacob, one of the patriarchs, a man of genuine faith. And in the not too distant future, we will take an entire Sunday morning and just look at the testimony of this man's faith. And yet, on the other hand, Jacob is in many ways very relatable. He is a man of true and tremendous faith, and he is a man of true humanity, a true sinful humanity. And of course, you know that although he is the youngest of the twins, God had promised him the birthright and the blessing. And those then were taken from his somewhat older brother Esau, upon which time Esau threatened to kill Jacob. And so Jacob ran away to his uncle's. And he has been there for 20 years. He's got two wives, 11 children, living in the realm of modern-day Syria. And now he wants to go home. Now it's time for him to go back home. This is a good desire. It is a desire that is in accord with the will and word of the Lord. Genesis 28:15, God said, "Behold, I am with thee, will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." And of course, there's a lot to that, folks, without going back to revisit it, but Jacob is the third in the line of those who are recipients of the Abrahamic covenant, which includes the land of Palestine, the promised land. But this is our story this morning. Jacob desires to go home. And we will work our way through it in the course of the conversation with not only his uncle, but his father-in-law. They have a conversation about what his wages will be. And it is obvious and evident from the story that Jacob is a man who has an ability to multiply wealth far in excess of Laban's. And it is all of this material substance that will occupy a large part of the story. A story like this really kind of requires of us to pose two questions. At least I'm going to pose two questions to a text like this. In what way does this story help us to understand the greatness of God's salvation for all of his people? What is kind of the big picture of this story? This is, I think, a question that we want to ask of Bible text. What is the big picture? Not what does it mean to me and how does it help me? That's a part of it, and I'll come to that. But what does this mean to the people of God in general, who have lived over all these years and in all these places and in all these circumstances? After all, we are reading about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and we are neither Abram nor Isaac nor Jacob. And then, of course, another question is, how does a story like this impact my own individual Christian life? What does it mean to me? And that, I think, folks, really is an equally legitimate question. It's not the first question. It's not the only question, but it is a question. What in this story impacts me that is of benefit to the life that I am living for the Lord in the situation in which I find myself? So to come out with answers to those questions, or at least attempts to answer those questions, let's walk our way through the story, and we will do that by looking at it in three large chunks. The first one is the one that we have just read, verses 22 through 34. In which the blessing of God is evident in the life of Jacob. The blessing of God is evident in the life of Jacob. He has been blessed now with two wives. One of them, of course, he doesn't like, but she has given him six sons. One of them he has been passionately in love with since the day that he met her, and she finally now gives him a son that they have together, Joseph. And she anticipates that there will be more. Jehovah has added. That's really what the word Joseph means. God has added. The blessing of God is evident in the life of Jacob. How do we know that? Well, we have a child that we have named. God has added him to us. And then we have this testimony: the Lord will add another son. The Lord will add another son. Verses 25 through 34 go on to explain the blessing of God materially. Now that really does become a little more dicey, folks. But understand that in the Old Testament, one of the primary ways that God demonstrated and manifested his blessing on people was through their material possessions. That this was how he could visibly demonstrate his promise to and his fulfillment of his promise to these covenant people was by giving them things that they could see and touch and handle. In the New Testament, it becomes a little more tricky, and I'm not going to try and expand on that a lot this morning. But, folks, we do not follow the trajectory of those who are health and prosperity preachers who argue that all of God's blessings are material and that only material blessings are what you should pursue. We will set that aside. This text uses the agricultural world to promote the evidence of God's blessing. If you look, for instance, at verse number 27, both Laban and Jacob recognized that this abundant increase in animals is the hand of the Lord. Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. So even Laban sees that this is the hand of God. And I just want to pause here, folks. This really doesn't have anything to do with the service. But I know that some of you are looking at an ESV this morning, and you don't have the word experience. You have the word divination. You have the word divination, which is technically an accurate translation of the Hebrew word. Divination. Word is used 11 times in 9 verses. In 9 of the 11 times the Hebrew word is used, it is translated with the word divine or enchant. In 1 Kings 20:33, it is translated diligently observe. Diligently observe. I think that our King James Bible captures the essence of it accurately for one of the ways that people divined, right? We're talking about a primitive ancient form of understanding things was the practice of divination, looking at stars, interpreting signs and wonders. One of the things that the ancients did was kill an animal and then look at the liver. One of the prophets, I think it's Daniel, maybe, no, it's not, I don't think it's Daniel, maybe it's Jeremiah, Isaiah, talks about one of the pagan rulers. How bright is the liver? They read the signs of the times in things like animal entrails. Divination. And one of the ways that you divined was by observation. And that's really what they're getting at here with this idea of experience. Laban says, it is obvious to me that the hand of the Lord is upon you, for look at what I can see. I observe. My experience is that God has blessed you. By the way, I took that Hebrew word and plugged it into Google Translate, and it came up with, I guessed. I guessed. To go back to the verse, to verse number 27. Laban knew that God had blessed Jacob. He looked at this large flock that he didn't have before, and he knew where it came from. It was the blessing of God upon the life of Jacob. And in verses 29 and 30, Jacob knows it. He said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee and how thy cattle was with me, for it was little which thou hadst before I came. And it is now increased into a multitude, and the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. So both Laban and Jacob, folks, we're trying to understand the point that the story is making. And that is that the blessing of God is evident on the life of Jacob. And it is evident through the sons that God has given him, through the family that God has given him, and through the abundance of the flocks that God has given to him. And what follows then is a conversation on the terms under which Jacob may leave. I want to go. Verses 25 and 26. I want to go. In verses 27 and 28, Laban says, I don't want you to go. It is better for me if you stay. But tell me what your wages should be. And verses 29 through 33, Jacob gives his answer. here's what I would take for my wages. Verse number 31, Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will stay. Here is my request. Verse 32, I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle and all the brown cattle among the sheep, which is just kind of a quirk in the translation. I mean, there's nothing wrong there. The word cattle is kind of a generic word for livestock. Okay, so I mean, he's not saying I will pick out the brown cows, but I will pick out the brown among the sheep and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and if such shall be my hire. All right. Obviously, folks, you'd have to be experienced in this world to understand the differences and the nuances in the color, right? Could we agree on that? What Jacob is doing is, let's put it this way, Jacob is basically arguing for the rejects, for the less than perfect, for the less than desirable. Right? I will take the black sheep. I will take the unusually colored goats. And if you'll give me those, then that will be my hire and I will stay and work for you longer. I think that the text implies, folks, without requiring us to become experts in the animal world, that Jacob is singling out the least desirable animals. The most desirable will stay with Laban, and the least desirable will belong to Jacob. And so in verse number 34, Laban kind of sort of consents. And we want to remember, folks, that Laban is far from the most upright guy in his own right. I would it might be according to thy word. There very much is, and if only it were so, dimension to his reluctant agreement. So this is where the story begins, right? The evidence of God's blessing, or God's blessing is evident on the life of Jacob. Laban knows it. Jacob knows it. Jacob is not arguing for his expertise in animal husbandry. He is not arguing for his hard work. He is pointing out that this is the blessing of the Lord. That brings us to the second point. Verse 35 through 43. And he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar, and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and peeled white strakes in them, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-straked, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob did separate the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring-straked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban, and he put his own flock by themselves, and put them not under Laban's cattle. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in, so the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's, and the man increased exceedingly and had much cattle, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. So the first major chunk is that the blessing of God is evident in the life of Jacob. The second major chunk reveals that the blessing of God on Jacob is unstoppable in spite of the activity of Laban. You don't want to miss what happened, folks. Here are these two grown men having a conversation. Jacob says, I would like to go back home. His father-in-law says, I don't want you to go, but if you're going to go, what should your wages be? Jacob says, I will take the inferior of the flocks. Whatever an inferior-looking sheep is, I will take it. Whatever an inferior-looking goat is, I will take it. Now notice very carefully what happens, folks, in verse 35. The he in verse number 35 is Laban. The he in verse 35 is not Jacob. The he in verse 35 is Laban. Laban removed that day the goats that were ring-straked and spotted and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted and every one that had some white in it and all the brown among the sheep and gave them into the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob. That's how you know who the he is, by the way. So Jacob said, I'll go through and I'll pick the inferior. Laban said, I'll do it. I'll do it. And so Laban went through and picked all the inferior, separated out the inferior, gave them to his sons. Boys, these are Jacob's animals. You take care of them. Jacob, you take care of my animals. I know that the blessing of the Lord is on you. You take care of my animals. So now Jacob has, again, folks, I'm just making this up, right? Everything I know about animals is pretty much confined to the words like hamburger and steak, okay? So here's Jacob. Now he's watching his animals go away under Laban's sons, and he looks out on a sea of white animals. They are his. They're not his by possession, but they are his. He made an agreement. Give me the inferior, and I will take care of your animals. Deal's deal. So Jacob devises a plan. And this, folks, you know that this is where things get tricky. Not tricky. This is where things, right, this is where we got to stop. And we got to kind of think about this. Jacob devises this plan. Verse 37, he takes rods of green poplar, right? Takes poplar branches from the poplar tree. And of the hazel and the chestnut tree, and he peeled. That the word peeled looks like pilled in your King James Bible, is peeled. That's what the word is. Why they spelled it that way, I could not tell you for the life of me. But it is the word peeled. He peeled them. Right? He scraped the bark off and made stripes. And he arranges these sticks in front of the feeding troughs. And what happens is that the animals breed when they come to the feeding troughs and they begin to produce the kind of animals that belong to Jacob, striped, speckled, spotted. Now here's the question. Did that really work? Let me ask you a question. Would you do it? Would you do it? If you had two brown cows and you wanted, right? If you got, not, I'm sorry, I got, because I got, we got real farmers here, right? And you can't do this with two brown cows. If you've got a brown bull and you've got a brown cow, and what you really want is a white calf, do you really think if you peeled all the bark off of a tree and stuck it in their face that you'd end up with a white calf? I don't think any of us think that. But the question, folks, really the question is, what did Jacob think? And I don't know the answer to that because the text, this is just one of those mystery places where the Bible goes, here's what's happened. But folks, you've got to understand, I hope we understand, that this had nothing to do with peeling bark off of a tree. This is the hand of the Lord. This is the work of the Lord. And in fact, folks, look over at chapter 31 and verse number 7. Your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstrake shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ringstraked. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. Now again, you got to ask the question. You got to come up with, all right, I'm going to tell you what I think the answer is. I think Jacob is speaking sincerely and truthfully. But you could make the argument that he's taking the name of the Lord in vain, that God had nothing to do with it and had everything to do with peeling bark off a tree. To go back, folks, to the large chunk, right? Two large chunks. Jacob and Laban know that Jacob has the blessing of God. Now you and I know that Jacob has the blessing of God. You and I know it because we read it. We read the testimony of these two men that he has God's blessing. Now here's another piece of information that we add. You can't stop God's blessing. You can't stop it. You can't stop it if you're on Laban's side trying to undo it, and you can't stop it if you're on Jacob's side resorting to maybe something that is superstitious or perhaps more reasonably just an old wives' tale. I mean, Jacob may not have thought for a moment that there was any magical power in this. He may have put it into the realm of the mandrakes, right? This is what we do. But the point the text is making, folks, is this. You cannot stop the blessing of God. If God has determined to bless, it cannot be stopped. And that brings us to the third major chunk, and I'm going to read very quickly verses 1 through 21 of chapter 31. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. And he said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me, changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstrake shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ringstraked. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointedst the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee from this land, return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him as strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. Then Jacob rose up, set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Padan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that she had told him not that he fled. So he fled all that he had and rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. And this section will serve as our third major chunk. The blessing of God is evident in the life of Jacob. The blessing of God is unstoppable. And yet the blessing of God is unpopular. The blessing of God is unpopular. And this must reach a fever pitch of unhappiness. These men are separated by a three-day journey. That's a pretty long haul, folks, if you're walking or at best riding on a donkey. That's a long haul. That's a lot of time to make up. And yet they do. And they are convinced that they are victims of Jacob, verse number 1. He heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's. Remember the terms. Remember Laban's consent. Remember Laban's actions. He made the decision on what was an inferior animal. He separated out the herds. He separated the flocks. But there are two different accounts of what's going on, aren't there? Laban's version is verse number 31, and Jacob and his wife's version begins in verse number 2. Your dad thinks I've stolen his stuff, but I didn't steal his stuff. I lived by the terms of the agreement, and these are the things that God has done. And then Jacob's wives agree, and the story concludes this way with yet another one of these little bit of mysteries. Right? Textually. Verse number 1 through verse number 21 kind of all tell the story in terms of thievery. Laban's sons say, Jacob stole. The Bible text says, Rachel stole. And then the Bible text goes on to tell you this, Jacob stole away. Because that's how he left. He made a quiet escape. He made a quiet escape. I got a question after last week's message that obviously, or pretty obvious from the text, that Leah is a believer. She attributes all of her children to the Lord, even in the expression of her sadness. But what about Rachel? And what about Rachel? I think, folks, I think that the text in general would incline us to put Rachel among the covenant people. Like Jacob, her conduct is not always commendable. And we could go on and on and on forever without knowing about why she stole her dad's images. But I think that as you're thinking through why she stole them, idolatry isn't the only viable answer, and vengeance probably is. Spite. Right? These are people in a family conflict. And in conflict, people act that way. They act viciously. You know what? These things really matter to Dad. I'm really mad at Dad. Dad really doesn't like us very much. I'm going to take these. And the story kind of, right, because Laban is kind of going off on this tangent, this tirade, and then with really out even turning direction, he goes, who took my images? Who stole my idols? Jacob goes, nobody stole your idols. Go look for them. And, you know, the story, how he goes look, and Rachel won't get up. And And again, verse number 20, using the same Hebrew word, Laban's boy said, Jacob stole. Rachel did steal. And then Jacob stole away. Secrecy, that's what the idea, that's the idea of the whole thing, secretly. Right? You acted secretly. So again, those are the three main chunks of the story. Jacob is enjoying the blessing of God. And it is evident for anybody to see. And that blessing cannot be stopped, even though Laban tries to stop it. And then that blessing proves very unpopular when it cannot be stopped. Which brings me finally to this. Right, we began with two questions. Big picture, personal application. So let's talk first about the big picture. Remember, folks, because we are never, ever, ever, even in 2024, very far away from the promises of the Abrahamic covenant. I will bless them that bless thee. I will curse them that curse thee. And in thee shall all nations of the earth be blessed. Of course, Laban enjoys blessing through Jacob in a way that Jacob does not enjoy blessing through Laban, because the Abrahamic promise is made to Jacob and not to Laban. Jacob is protected, folks, in the big picture scheme of things. Jacob's protection is not on what a good guy Jacob is and what a hard worker Jacob is. Jacob's protection is this. He's under the umbrella of the Abrahamic covenant. He is enjoying the covenant promise and protection of the Lord. And so human treachery is unsuccessful in undoing the blessing. And of course, if you flip that, Laban in his entirety is dependent upon Jacob, and he doesn't even recognize this. Laban is totally dependent upon blessing, because the blessing of salvation is going to come physically through the descendant of Jacob, not through the descendant of Laban. And by the way, Genesis 31 ends Laban. He's gone from the Bible. There's no, these are the generations of Laban to be found. He fulfilled his part of the Bible story, and he has gone on to whatever awaits him. Big picture, when Jesus said, fast forward many years after Jacob, John 15, 18, if the world hate you, know that it hated me before it hated you. That's not just psychological comfort. There's a whole lot of Bible theology that undergirds that. The very nature of salvation is that the rejection of God means the rejection of those who follow God. It has been that way from Cain and Abel's day. It will always be that way. So for us, big picture, right? We who are saved are on the receiving end of the promises and blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. And although we might experience treacherous people, their treachery will ultimately be unsuccessful. Now again, for us, you can't just reduce this to all financial or material, but their plans will be thwarted. So there's the big picture. What do we do about this on a personal level? And now let me move a little farther away from the trunk of the tree out into a little more flexible branch. It is an unfortunate and yet sad reality that human conflict is part of life. And it often happens within the framework of a family dynamic. This is a family that is in conflict. This is a grandfather. This is a father who is in conflict with his daughters and his son-in-law. These are cousins. This is a family deal. And although the word is never used, folks, I would suggest to you that the text of the story clearly indicates that it could be used. Envy is a powerful part of the conflict. They've stolen our dad's stuff. And in fact, folks, look at verse number 31 carefully. He heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. All this glory. Because even to this day, folks, we're impressed with people who have a lot of stuff. Are we not? Does it not pose a problem when somebody has more? So I would just caution you at a personal level to never underestimate the power of envy. Proverbs 14:30 says, envy is the rottenness of the bones, and the root idea of the Old Testament word envy is to be shriveled up or withered away. So it might be that if you enjoy the blessing of the Lord, and if that blessing comes in a material way, or if it comes in the way of a particularly sweet relationship, that you might find yourself on the receiving end of somebody's envious words or envious actions. A sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy the rottenness of the bones, Proverbs 14:30. Matthew and Mark both tell us that the human reason Jesus was delivered over to the Jewish council was because they were envious of him. They wanted people to praise them the way that people praised Jesus. They were envious. But then I would go on to caution us, folks, to not be unmindful of the potential of our own envy, that we would be envious of what someone else has, a relationship or a substance or any other thing that would stir up our envy, that we wish that we had it and we begrudge them for having it, when all Christians would understand that these are the blessings of the Lord. And that the right way to deal with this, and I'm just going to have to speak very broadly because I just am not going to take the time to play this, to trace this out in the New Testament. But the best way to deal with envy is to be biblically obedient, to put it in its proper framework, and to respond as God instructs. In Jacob's case, it was for him to go, right? The Lord had promised, Genesis 28:15, I was going to bring you back. When Jacob said, God showed up and told me in a dream, there's no reason to think that he's lying. God showed up and said, it's time to go back home, and go back home you will. That doesn't necessarily make the way Joseph left commendable, stealing away in the middle of the night. But he did what was right and obedient. So folks, when it comes to this matter of conflict, whether it be envy driven or not, right? God tells us as New Testament saints to pursue peace. And sometimes we pursue peace by getting our own bloody nose. Sometimes we take the hit and we suffer the loss. That's what Paul argued in 1 Corinthians 6. Just take the hit to your wallet. And then, folks, we're to deal with these people graciously and personally. The New Testament is very clear about that. These are grievances that need to be resolved personally, not through third parties, not by talking to our friends about it, but by talking to the party who is the offender or the offended. Let's pray together this morning. Lord God,